Hello, everybody. This is Evan, the host of Blind Level Tech, coming at you with a really quick announcement before we get into part two with Josh Miel. You might have noticed that my co-host Kelvin Crosby has been absent for a couple episodes. Kelvin has been picking up a lot of new opportunities, including a new podcast, which I will talk about really quickly. And he's also ramping up production and development into a newly redesigned See Me cane. So we have decided to move forward, and he will be transitioning away from Blind Level Tech as co-host, which means I will be taking over as pretty much the host and the sole runner of the show for the foreseeable future. So it will be a transition, but I'm ultimately excited to see where we can take the show. Now, I'd really encourage you guys to go check out what Kelvin is doing. You go check out his website, first of all, deafblindpotter.com. And he's got some of his own podcasts, including the Perseverance podcast and a new one that he actually started a couple months ago called the Investing in Accessibility podcast. And recommend that you guys go check it out. I've been listening for, since the beginning, but I digress. And just a heads up for next week, there will not be a regularly scheduled episode because of the CSUN convention. With that being said, here's Josh Miel.
Welcome to Blind Level Tech. This isn't just accessible tech talk. This is technology on a whole new level. We're showing you just how possible it is to live the life you want.
Greetings and salutations and whatever else. And welcome.
Hi, and how are you?
How are you? Yes, welcome to Blind Level Tech. I am your host, Evan Starnes. I am not joined by my co-host, Kelvin Crosby, this week, but I am once again joined by Josh Mealy to kind of follow up on our discussion from last week in regards to the future of accessibility, and moreover, now, the future of accessibility for blind and low vision students. So I'll start things off. I was a college student for a couple of years, and I did have a good experience, but I kind of wished I had asked more questions and used the resources I've been given more so. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about what all of these new innovations, including AI, are bringing to the table. So, yeah, Josh, welcome back to the show.
And it's great to be here.
Absolutely.
Thank you. It's fun to be back, and I'm super excited to talk about accessibility and student stuff, because that's what makes me it's one of the most important areas, right? I mean, if you're blocked on getting a good education, you're blocked on a lot of other things.
So a lot of opportunities.
It's good to make sure that that the student experience is accessible. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you want to talk about tech, right?
Of course.
But I think a lot of a lot of the stuff isn't technical. A lot of the stuff is just sort of soft skills and knowing how to juggle your life and manage things as a student. And I think, you know, that's not unique to blind kids. That's like every young student that goes to college is figuring that out, but it's just so much harder when you've got the added, logistics of being blind. Like, there's just a lot to deal with,
and
people don't always want to, people don't always want to admit that being blind is extra work, but it definitely is. Like, there's just a lot more to manage. It's not overwhelming. It's not work that can't be done, but it's extra work.
Definitely. And yes, we can be prideful here as blind people. And I get that. I'm one of them. And I do like your point, though, because there are some differences, you know, if you are a blind or low vision student, because yes, besides the whole like juggling a student life and a job potentially or family problems or whatever it might be, you know, you also have to work with things like disability support services and also, you know, getting materials ahead of time and getting to becoming more familiar, more so familiar with, you know, your professors than a lot of other students. You know, you guys work, you and the professor work a little more closely together. Well, that's also assuming.
If you're lucky.
Yes.
If you're lucky.
I'm glad you said that because, yeah, some professors don't necessarily, they either don't know how or don't want to learn how to work with individuals with blindness or low vision, or for that matter, other disabilities too. And it's sad, but with that being said, I've been really, really excited about a lot of these new technological innovations coming out as of late. You know, we've got smart glasses and guiding robots and all this talk about AI. You know, it's this buzzword that goes around and around and around. But right now, you know, and for the longest time, we've had access to a lot of good assistive tools. When you think of assistive technology for students, like what first comes to mind for you?
Well, I mean, again, like, you know, you know, I'm a tech guy. Everybody thinks, oh, Josh Mealy's a tech nerd, right? But
same.
Or, I mean, if they think of it, I don't, you know, if you even know who I am, whatever. But I mean, I don't think that tech is, you know, tech is great. Some tech is great, but like the most important thing is to use tech that you need and to know when to say no to tech that you don't need, because a lot of the time it can really slow you down when somebody tries to like say, oh, you should be using this, and you know, honestly, I'm more comfortable using that. And and that's you know, part of the skill building thing is to be able to kind of stand up and tell the so-called experts, no, like this is how I think I want to do it, this is the way that's going to work for me. You know, you asked about the tech, and you know, I think the most important thing for a blind, you know, a totally blind person who's going to school, what am I going to say, Evan?
Their screen reader.
Braille, man, Braille.
Braille, yes.
You gotta know Braille. If you don't know Braille, like it's not to, you know, nothing, you know, no shame on people who are still learning Braille or who are working on it. And
absolutely,
of course, for people that are, you know, that have some vision remaining, there's other ways to get information. But if you can't read and write Braille, there's gonna be a bunch of stuff that's just tough. And one of the things that I always tell people, so I have a, when I went to college, I studied physics. Physics was my undergraduate degree. And so that's a hard science, you know, and there's no way you can write and learn and manipulate equations that you, and you have to do that for any math or science. You're going to have to manage math. And you can't do it without Braille. You might think that you can do it on a computer. Maybe you can do it on a Braille display. But the thing is that to do really handy, you know, to manipulate math conveniently, you need to be able to not only look at what you're writing, look at the new part of the equation that you're working with, but you've got to be able to easily look back at what you did before and look at other stuff while keeping that the thing that you're working on in sort of in front of you. And so if you only have a single line Braille display, it's very difficult to do any kind of math manipulation in you know, digitally. So I'm kind of a, you know, I'm all for very cool digital tech when it's appropriate, but you can't get away from Braille on paper with a Perkins. I sound like an old person, but there's no digital technology that I've found that makes that kind of stuff easier than, you know, that makes math manipulation easier than Braille on a Perkins. And being able to write Braille is really useful for taking notes and for writing quick things down. I don't think you need to necessarily be able to,
you don't need to be like a 150 plus words a minute or what, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. You don't have to be able to read, like be a speed reader. That's great. If you can, like, that's super cool. Being a good high quality, high speed Braille reader, efficient and all that, that's an amazing skill and it's very good. But for folks that are struggling with Braille, a lot of the time, I think that, sort of the perfect is the enemy of the good. And I'm here to say, even just a little bit of Braille skill and knowledge is very, very useful for daily living, for labeling stuff, for, you know, taking notes, for, you know, putting labels on jars and
reading, you know, bathroom signs and elevator buttons,
knowing which bathroom you're going into, all that stuff. But man, there's no more important tool for a totally blind student than Braille.
I have to say right now, going into this episode, I mean, I talk tech all the time and the latest and greatest. I am so glad that you brought up the point of Braille. I will provide a personal example from my past college experiences where Braille really would have benefited me. And let me first say, I was taught Braille and I know Braille and can read and write in it. I am a stubborn and, you know, it's like, oh, nobody else is using the Perkins. I don't want to use one either because it's loud. But I was taking a math class and it was an introductory math class. But, you know, that being said, you know, eventually we got down to, you know, some more complex algebraic problems. And these problems, you know, it's not just something you can just boom, 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 throw it in a and you shouldn't really throw it in a calculator. I'm just not of the
proponent. Yeah, no, you got to write it down and look at it.
Exactly. And I was trying to do it with my Braille sense, and I had a heck of a time. And just had I had that Braille, the Braille writer, or, you know, as if you're a slate and stylus user, whatever, had I had that multi-line piece of paper, you can reel it up and down, you can move the carriage any which way you want, it would have made things a lot easier. I mean, yes, there are pluses and minuses to it. Like, you know, you do have to have your Braille interlined and turn it into the teacher that way. But if you're a blind student going and you're going to take any, like, especially math heavy stuff, it'll save you so much headache. And it would have saved me a lot of headache too. And colleges, you know, especially disability support, like they actually had, you know, Perkins Braille writers on loan, you know. So if you don't have a Perkins, you just go ahead and snag a Perkins.
And I mean, I just want to say, like, I didn't bring a Perkins to class. Like, that's you're right. That is, it's noisy. It's, you know, embarrassing. Like, you don't want to bring a Perkins to class, but for working your problem sets or for doing your, you know, in the privacy of your own study situation, you gotta use Braille. And also, I just want to say one other thing about Braille. So when I was, when I was studying physics and stuff, like I had grown up using Nemeth Braille, which is the math and science code,
dropped
for Braille. And it's, man, there's a lot to know in the Nemeth code, right? Yep. There's like a lot to know in there. But it's, and I feel like people are often intimidated by Braille codes, because they feel like they don't want to write they don't want to write it incorrectly. Mm-hmm. I just always made up my own codes. Like, a lot of the time, like, there are certain things in Nemeth that are like 3 or 4 characters long. And I'm like, man, I don't have time to write all 3 or 4 of those characters. Like, I'm not using this symbol for anything right now.
Punctuation indicators and all that rough.
I mean, some things are important. You don't want to leave, like, you don't, like, functionally, you don't want to shortchange yourself. You want to be able to read it and you want it to be accurate. But I encourage people to make up their own codes as needed, because, and you know, the Braille Authority will, you know, probably put a contract out on me. But I mean, I feel like a lot of the time people are slowed down in their Braille usage and Braille maturity by not knowing what the right symbols are for X, Y, or Z, and not literally, but, you know, for this and that. And a lot of the time you can just make up your own code and just use it. Nobody else is going to be reading it. It's your own notes. It's your own work. Just do what works for you, and don't stress so much about what the quote unquote right way to do it is.
Absolutely.
It's more important to have something that you can read and write than it is to have something that somebody else can say, oh yeah, you did it the right way.
You know what? You're bringing back some memories actually from when I was in school, because I did that. But also I think I was thinking of, like, you know, I used to write my math assignments and have them interlined by my TBI at the time. Mm-hmm. And they used to get on me for that. Like, you didn't use the rod indicator, but you actually kind of, you framed it in a way, especially for college students, wherein, you know, you could use the Brailler to solve problems, but then write your answers, you know, on the worksheet, especially if it's digital, and turn it mm-hmm. in that way. That actually makes a lot more sense too. So,
and one of the things that I would do, like, I didn't have somebody to read my Braille. Mm-hmm. I had to, like, you know, there was nobody interpreting my Braille for the professors or for the TAs. Like, I had to read, you know, I had to read my stuff out to somebody else who would transcribe it into a blue book. So long as I can read it out loud and somebody else can write it down from what I'm reading, that's what really matters, right?
There you go. Now, I'm curious too, with kind of circling back to new technological innovations, I'm sure you've heard of the HumanWare Monarch thing that just came out last year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that device? Because I haven't seen one. I was impressed, and then I heard the price tag and I was like, whoa, this is like expensive, like it's almost as much as a new car sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we've been, you know, refreshable Braille, one line of Braille characters. Sometimes it's, you know, if you're really lucky, you've got, you know, a desktop unit that's like 60 or 80 characters
80 cells,
long.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got, you know, if you've got something portable, then maybe it's 40 at the most. A lot of people just have, you know,
18, 20,
12 or 12, 18, 20, yeah. 14. Focus 14. I remember seeing one that was 8. You know, one line of Braille is not,
it's not a lot.
I believe in the importance of spatial information, the importance of stuff that's laid out on a page. Like when a sighted person writes an equation, there are all kinds of spatial aspects to it, like a ratio, you know, a fraction. You put one part above the other part and like directly spatially above it. You know, we don't do it that way in Braille all the time because we've got different ways of doing it. It's very linear, but the spatial stuff is really actually wonderful and very useful. And you can't do any of that when you've got a single line Braille display. So I'm super interested in better access to spatial representations, better access to not only being able to lay out Braille, you know, in a spatial way, like one thing above the other, like columns of text, but also graphics, right? I'm a big proponent of tactile graphics and maps and charts and being able to represent information in, you know, in graphical forms. And, you know, graphical doesn't mean visual. Graphical means laid out in a spatial, two-dimensional in this sense, right?
Yeah.
To be able to show a chart or a plot or a graph or, you know, a bar graph or a pie chart, you know, these are really powerful things to be able to do. And if you've got a Braille embosser, you can print out tactile graphics that you can feel, and that's super cool. But if you don't, you know, if you want to have something that you can look at, that sort of thing that's more like a screen, more like a tablet, then what they're trying to do with the Monarch is really, really important.
Agreed.
And we've been trying to do that technologically
years, man. I mean, we've had
since the 1960s, and lots of people have made two-dimensional tactile displays like the Monarch, and nobody has managed to make it cheap. When they started out making the Monarch, they said it was going to be less than $5,000, and really? It's not.
Not even remotely. It's
yeah. And it's cool that lots of blind kids, lots of blind students in the U.S., if all goes according to plan, will get those for free, right?
Yes, definitely.
But the rest of us, who are working or whatever, if you have to pay for it yourself, it's
good luck.
Way out of reach.
Yeah.
But for the students, for anybody that can get one, it's an amazing, the concept is amazing. And I haven't, they're still working on, they're working on all of the user interface stuff and all of that still, right. I think. And I have very high hopes for it. I think that it could potentially be of real benefit to be able to, on a refreshable display, show text and braille and graphics mixed together. That's super cool and important.
And we're getting there. I mean, it's like you think about, self-driving vehicles. Like, we have those Waymo taxis now, which we didn't have like a couple of years ago. I think it's going to be kind of one of those like technological leaps that is going to happen within a couple of years, because I've seen some iterations of Braille tablets before. There's one. The first one I'd ever heard of was called the Blitab or Blytab.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one that was based on a Raspberry Pi. I heard about it, and I forget what the thing was called. It was really cool. And then, yeah, we have the Monarch, which I really think I hope to see a demo of at CSUN, because I definitely love to get my hands on one. I think it is going to be a thing of once the technology is like – once we know what works. Like I'm sure – Braille displays are not a new concept at all nowadays, but it was kind of one of those there are a lot of different experimental things. There's pocket Braille, the Braille and Speak, which doesn't have a Braille display, but eventually tech companies did figure out, what makes a whatever Braille display size, they figured out what works. And that's why we have, Braille displays and Braille note takers. And yeah, I think once it might be HumanWare that figures out the format and the formula to successful and affordable multi-line Braille. And I think once that happens, we're going to see a lot more companies producing these Braille. They're really Braille tablets as it is. Mm-hmm. So
may it be so.
I'm excited.
I hope
about
so.
That.
Yeah.
Now, how about things like OCR and image recognition? We're seeing a lot of live real-time recognition through like ChatGPT and, stuff that can describe what's around you in real time. For students, like this multimodal AI, I think it'll make it easier to do things like, read the board. And if the teacher puts something, if they revise something that they've already written on the board, it won't re-summarize what they said. It'll just say, what they've revised, I guess. If you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, and I hope that, we all know that there's a real reliability problem in visual. AI, the AIs that do visual interpretation, they just make stuff up a lot of the time.
Yep.
Not to say that they're not useful, because I've definitely, I've found such cool ways to use, ChatGPT and Be My AI and other sort of models. And, for example, like I do a lot of electronics, right? Like I build stuff with Arduino and Raspberry Pi. And,
oh, yeah.
You've got these like,
integrated circuits and stuff.
Integrated circuits, but like you also just have simple things like resistors, right?
Yeah.
And a resistor is painted with color bands around it. And the color bands are you know, for sighted people, they can just look at those color bands, and if they're, you know, experienced at it, they can just tell you what the value of the resistor is. They can say, oh, that's a 10 mega ohm resistor, right?
Yeah.
But a blind person, you got to get out your meter and test it and figure out what the value of the resistor is. I used Be My Eyes to just take a picture of it, and it told me what the resistor was, you know. And there's things like that that are super amazing and very cool that we can use AIs, the, you know, different types of visual interpretation that we can use AI for. And I think, you know, I think your use case of blackboards or, you know, whiteboards or, you know, classroom, you know, screens in the classroom are very, you know, those are good examples of where we can start experimenting with different, you know, ways of using AI to get visual information. But really I think we're sort of fighting the last war there, because more and more of the information that you actually need is digital already now in the classroom. And so rather than relying on glasses to tell you what the professor's writing on the board, like, those class notes are likely to be available to you digitally anyway. Not to say that, you know, there's no need for visual, you know, AI-based visual interpretation. Yeah. But I think it's less and less, because more and more is already online, and it's more, there's more to be gained by pushing professors and universities into ensuring that the digital information that they are sharing and using is accessible, you know, that it's marked up appropriately, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. And really, it kind of begs the question, when it comes to accessibility for students nowadays, like, really, what should professors and educators be prioritizing when it comes to accessibility? I think you kind of answered that question a little bit earlier, but, you know, I am still wondering if there's some areas that are being not addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are. I mean, I think that there's a lot that's incumbent on the university or, you know, the college itself to make sure that whatever learning management system they're using, whatever they're giving the professors to use for grading, for communication, for all of that, that has to be accessible. And if it's and when I say accessible, I don't just mean that they've got some kind of VPAT or whatever that they can point to and say, oh, yeah, we've passed the, you know, checklist. Mm-hmm. It has to be actually usable. Like, blind students actually have to be able to use it with not a significant amount more hassle than sighted kids can use it. And if that's not the case, then I say it's not accessible. So I think that there are a lot of marginally accessible learning management systems out there that colleges are like, what do you mean? It's accessible. You know, students should be able to use it. And it's just, that's not setting anybody up for success to just pretend that stuff is usable when it's not.
Absolutely not. It's the concept of accessible versus innovative and the balance of both. And mm-hmm. often, yeah, it is just, especially, you know, bigger companies, it is just kind of a matter of, this meets all the requirements, so we're not going to worry about it anymore.
There's a huge difference between, you know, compliant and usable.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's great when you get both. You can get both, but compliant does not mean usable. And usable doesn't necessarily mean compliant.
No, that's true. I think it's really a can of worms that I honestly kind of feel like we should get like a panel. I'd be curious to hear other people's thoughts on this, because I feel like, you know, people talk about, oh, this is becoming more and more accessible, blah, 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 every single, you know, pretty much every single day, at least from what I hear. But nobody really discusses the whole concept of, you know, what makes something that is already accessible usable? Because I don't know. I don't want to get down, go down any rabbit holes here because that's dangerous. But
well, we can put a pin in it. Come back to it.
Yeah, we definitely can. And one thing we definitely cannot come back to, and we do every week, of course, is the good old
sandwich of the week,
which didn't blast your ears off this time. Yay!
you guys are into sandwiches, huh?
We like, sure are into sandwiches.
You guys like sandwiches, but that's because of the BLT thing, right?
That's 100% the BLT thing, and it wasn't always that way, actually.
Yeah, but I think it's adorable. It's cute.
Thank you. I enjoy it. I like having little fun, quirky personality aspects to add to the show because, you know, I mean, we want to sound professional, but we also want to have humor. But
so do you have a sandwich?
I sure do. And what is it? It's actually you know what? It's a Sloppy Joe because I want one.
And Sloppy Joes are good. Sloppy Joes are good.
I like them.
So I'm gonna go in the bacon direction. I'm not gonna tell you about a sandwich, but I'm gonna tell you about a sort of a bacon adjacent experience I had the other day.
Yeah.
Where I had a family party over the holidays. Like had a spiral cut ham. You know, already cooked down the bone, made pea soup out of it. But I had a bunch of ham left, and you know what I'm talking about, right? That glazed. Yeah. Thick cut stuff. It's like amazing. And it, you know, I had like a couple pounds of it and I didn't want it to go bad. So what I did was I put the oven on like 300 and just laid it out flat on parchment paper on a cookie sheet and just put it in the oven for, you know, half hour, 45 minutes. It transformed into millionaire's bacon. Essentially. Oh. It went from ham to like incredibly sweet, crunchy, like just unbelievably toothsome bacon. Like it was a magic trick.
That is a wonderful magic trick. What do you have a name for this millionaire's bacon? I'm kind of
let's call it ham. I don't know. We could call it leftover, or no, that doesn't sound appealing. You never want to start with leftover, right?
Not really. It's not Shakespearean at all. We're not even talking about it literature, but for some reason, Hamlet was the first thing I thought of. Even though
Hamlet,
yeah,
or you could call it bacon, words, baconlet.
That is a good one, and I think we might try to do more. B and L themed non-sandwichy sandwiches of the week. I think it's fun.
You know, Evan, we started out the hour talk or the show anyway, talking about, you know, soft, you know, I was talking about Braille and, you know, we've talked about a lot of technology, but I want to kind of bring it back to some of the non-technical stuff that is like so super important for students. You know, we spend our, you know, our young years, our high school years and before elementary school, man, we just, as blind kids, we just want to blend in. We just want to be like everybody else. Yep. We don't want to draw attention to ourselves. We don't want to like stick out. And then you get to college and you've like the importance of self-advocacy is suddenly super important to your success. And you're still sort of, at least, you know, I was, and a lot of people are still kind of in this frame of like, oh, I don't want to cause trouble. I don't want to stick out. I don't want to be different. But you know what? You got to be different. You got to stick out. You've got to tell people what you need. And and by the way, in college, you know, things are changing. It's a little less uncool to be different in college. But we're still, you know, you're still probably have that high school hangover. But the thing is that to be successful in college, and believe me, it's not just you that wants to succeed, it's everybody around you. Your professors want you to succeed, the disabled students program or whatever it is wants you to succeed. Everybody wants blind kids to do well in college. And to do that, you got to be ready to speak up for yourself. You can't blend in. You can't sort of, you know, fade into the woodwork and hope that everything's going to be okay. In order to succeed, you've got to tell people what you need. You've got to work with people to get what you need. You've got to collaborate with people to like figure out new ways of doing things, because no matter how good those systems are at your college, they're probably not good enough, and they're probably not quite exactly what you need. And so you need to sort of figure out what you can use and what you need to adapt, and you just can't be shy. Mm-hmm. So learning how not to be shy, learning how to speak up, learning how to be a self-advocate is one of the most important things that a blind kid can do for their success in college, I think.
100%. Very, very, very well said. And just be prepared to be creative with your solutions. Think outside the box, because
mm-hmm. like what we were saying before about making up your own Braille codes.
Exactly. Well, goodness, Josh, this episode's going to be a great, great tie-in to our other podcast, Navigating Life with Vision Losses, topic on advocacy. Awesome. That is awesome. So, Josh, I got to say, I really, really want to thank you for coming on Blind Level Tech. I really also highly respect and appreciate your stance on Braille. I am the same, 100% of the same opinion, and I'm not here to provide – this isn't like an opinion show, but I will say I think that it is definitely unfortunate that blind students now are only being taught using speech. And yeah, I don't want to go down that topic because it makes me sad.
This too shall pass.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. But Josh, I just gotta shout you out. You got a memoir out now, and I really want to make sure that people know where they can get their hands on it and where people can find you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my memoir is called Connecting Dots: A Blind Life, and it is you can get it on Audible, or I hope at the library. You know, NLS should have it. And Bard should have it. I'm not sure if they have it quite yet, but they keep checking. Same thing for Bookshare, and of course you can get it on Kindle or as a as a hard copy print book, and you know, hit somebody with it if you want. It's got Braille on the cover, which I'm really psyched about.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much, Josh, and of course thank you so much everybody else for listening to another episode of Blind Level Tech. Of course, if you've got any questions or feedback for us, you can call 720-712-8856 and leave us a voicemail or email feedback@aftersight.org. With that being said, I'd like to remind everybody to not forget to plug in your devices, and we'll see you all again next week.